jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap it up.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp enough.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
All right, that is a wrap. It's 8:38 here on News Radio 92.3. It's a chance to talk about the news of the week or the things that we kind of all have in common that are interesting. Whenever I have people in here, you never know what's going to happen. That's why I like it. Jewel Canada Wynn is with us. She's, of course, a former teacher, retired now teacher, and also former city councilwoman. Jewel, welcome back to the wrap.
Thank you.
Good to have you.
Good morning, Pensacola.
You were actually, I'll get Jer on here in just a second, but you know, well, just let's bring him in. Jer Jacquet, did I say it right?
You did.
All right, put your face right up next to the microphone, like you're almost going to lick it. That's what that's the right place. He is the president of Bluffline and somebody who's kind of been active in various boards and advisories and, you know, different things. And I've kind of seen your name a bunch and I wanted to have you on the show. So welcome to the wrap.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. But, Jewel, you were kind of telling me that you had had to retire from teaching, and there's a change in the law that goes into effect tomorrow, and if it had been applied when you were teaching, you wouldn't have had to retire.
I would not have had to retire from the city council because they didn't want you to double dip.
Right, right.
And so now they're going to allow you to retire and get a pension and still work. And so, you know, legislature, y'all are just about 2 years too late.
I see.
For me, but it's going to help. You know, they said 600,000 other people. So you can't have this exodus of talent and this exodus of that. I think that is more to the problems of education and hiring teachers than just that. But I do think that that's good to keep some of that talent still there.
You know, I know you have a lot of roots still in education, but we were talking kind of about this last week too, that there are teachers, at least a number of whom, who have shown up at like city council and county commission meetings to say, we're no longer teaching because of the current environment with books and what we perceive as censorship, and they're afraid of running afoul of things. Have you talked to many people, or have you that have kind of expressed that to you? Or
I've talked to a few people, not a lot, but as an educator, I could sense the uncertainty.
Yeah,
you don't know where to go, and the only thing I could tell a teacher is that they have to stay their course, and they have to, you know, focus on the child and what that youth need to encourage, and making sure they provide that love, compassion, and consideration along with the educational needs, and stay that course. Our teachers are great people. They have not strayed as if the state of Florida has seemed to think they have strayed away from that their academic needs and the love of their students. And so I just don't know where that basis of this come from, because we have great teachers that do focus on the kids and the standards that's required of them.
I know for me, I know my personality. I would have been the one that would have said, you know, I'm going to teach what I'm going to teach, and if you got to drag me out of the classroom, then do it. You know, but I'm not going to leave preemptively. Like, you're going to force your hand. You're going to make this happen. Jarrah, you are the president of Bluffline. And for people who don't know, maybe give them like the elevator speech. Like, what is this project all about? Because it's a pretty huge project if it ever comes about.
It is. So the Bluffline is a ambitious multi-use trail project that's modeled on the Beltline in Atlanta, Underline in Miami, to some extent the High Line in New York City. And the goal of it is to provide a safe, comfortable, protected connection between East and West Pensacola through downtown. And I think what's a little bit different about the Bluffline compared to something like the Gulf State Park Trails or the Milton Blackwater Heritage State Trails is that it's not just recreational. I mean, recreational trails are wonderful. I have 5 young children, love to use them. But the Bluffline is intentionally designed to have utility for transportation needs.
So it's actually getting people from here to there, not just, you know, recreation and entertainment.
Exactly. You know, Jewel and I were talking a little bit earlier about you know, our huge workforce housing needs and the fact that for folks with limited income, housing and transportation eat up almost all of one's monthly budget. So if you tackle housing without tackling transportation issues, mm-hmm. you know, if you build affordable housing in Century for workers that work yeah. in downtown Pensacola, you're going to be spending $1,000 a month on gas, and so it's not going to help so much. Right. And so by
and of course, the more affordable, the farther from, typically.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely a, you know, a relationship there. And so, you know, by linking downtown with the West Side and some of the census tracts in the city that and county that have the lowest car ownership, you know, some of these census tracts, less than 50% of households have access to a vehicle.
Right.
And so, you know, our public transportation system, I would argue that we can do better than we're doing now. And so, you know, having safe ways to bike and walk for people to get to work, to get their, you know, groceries and their other daily needs, it's not just a nice to have. It's really an absolute necessity.
I'm always struck whenever I think about it because, yeah, look, I'm middle class. I've always had a car. You know, we have two cars. Actually three now. One kid's driving. So, you know, cars are just like breathing to me. It's so assumed, right? And so I always have to remind myself whenever I think about issues like, you know, workforce housing or job opportunities, that there are so many people for whom, you know, walking is their way of life or biking is their way yeah. of life. And we certainly don't have a society with infrastructure designed around accommodating that need. And I think, you know, whatever you think about the value of public, like bus transit, for example, it's a real, you know, nobody who drives a car says, you know, maybe I'll just start riding the bus instead. It's so much better. Like nobody would think that way because it's so inferior by comparison. And that should tell us something about whether we're really serving, you know, or making possible for those people to, you know, fully actualize themselves and have the economic opportunity that they need, right?
We here in Escambia County don't see public transportation as our cousins in large metropolitan areas
right.
in the North. See, public transportation is not an economic necessarily total issue. It's the way you get around more easily and everything to get around. However, here in our area, we are still a car-driven mm-hmm. community and county. And so for those people who I went out looking for a car, you know, I got my little hoopty, my little red Nissan there, but I need another car. And when you're talking about having to pay $650 a month just for the average vehicle, I mean, that's a horrible state when you're talking about I have X number of dollars to spend, my dollars go for rent. If I got to pay this, I have to go without that. That means I don't work, or I have to get up at 6 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning, catch three buses to get to this particular place. Mm-hmm. So the connectivity of us with our workplaces and everything is a vital is a vital. Even if you put affordable housing, you have to put that housing in that connectivity with transportation.
Yeah, and the needs. I mean, as you say, the cost of the car, the cost of insurance, the cost mm-hmm. of gas, and the flip side is, okay, you know, public transit might be cheaper, but there's a massive time cost in using public transit, a massive inconvenience, which of course is why people have cars. But, you know, if there are people who can't afford the car, you know, and they're already struggling a lot of times because, you know, maybe it's a single parent family, maybe they've got multiple kids, you know, maybe they're having to travel to work, which is very difficult to do, or a second job. You know, you start to realize that money and time become their scarce
yes.
commodity. And that's a challenge to make everything work. We're talking with former City Councilwoman Jewel Canada Wynn and Jared Jacquet here on The Wrap. Let's get Canyon here with Traffic on the Fives.
Brought to you by Avalon HR. With everything going on, you need Avalon. That's employing made easy. And again, good news, we're not showing any of these slowdowns on the roads. Be careful, certainly wherever you are. 29, accident-free, not showing any problems from the split at Pace Palafox all the way up to the Atmore cutoff. If you have a traffic tip, text it in, 437-1620, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. So back to Jewel and Jarrah. Question for you. I know, Jarrah, you were involved in the summit improvements, you know, looking at that, trying to make that safer. My perception is that people speed, but it's safe. Am I wrong? That's my perception is that it doesn't really need a lot of change, except maybe for parking around Roger Scott. But you tell me.
So what I would say is that, you know, you compare Summit Boulevard and the census tracts there and the neighborhoods surrounding it, And it's a very, very different demographic than something like West Cervantes
or West Jackson
Street, you know.
Which, by the way, West Jackson is going to be undergoing, or has, it's real soon, is going to be undergoing massive renovation. Massive renovation.
Super
safer, better, fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, not faster, but, you know, much, much better for sure.
Yeah, you know, so I would argue that the needs are different on Summit Boulevard. You know, the problem on Summit Boulevard right now, my wife, mother of five, she's a nurse at Sacred Heart Hospital. You know, right before I drove in here today, I actually had to say goodbye to her as she hopped on her bike and rode to work from the Cordova Park Inverness area to Sacred Heart Hospital.
Okay.
And what I'll say,
which is probably what, a mile, two,
it's
miles?
Probably 4 or 5.
Oh, okay.
Actually.
All right. I'm trying to put it in my head.
There's a long stretch of Summit Boulevard that she has to spend time on. So, you know, first of all, there have been like 68 accidents on Summit Boulevard in the last 4 or 5 years. By the grace of God, none fatal. I mean, actually, we had a very serious car versus bike accident last week, the day after a public meeting in which quite a few folks asserted that there's never been any accidents on Summit Boulevard.
Right.
But I would say that the bigger problem there is that because so many people, almost everyone, owns a vehicle on Summit Boulevard, it's the opportunity costs. It's that it's parents making a rational choice given the current circumstances of that road to say, look, I'm not going to let my kid cross Summit Boulevard to get to Roger Scott to play tennis or to go swimming or to go to football practice. They're saying, you know, when we ride our bikes with our kids, well, I mean, honestly, we just avoid Summit Boulevard. We cut through, but there are places where it's the only option.
Right.
And so I would say that Summit Boulevard is a problem. It's just that the people who live there are avoiding it.
No, that makes
instead
sense.
Of getting killed.
So like compared to say West Cervantes on the west side,
it reminds you of the Cervantes you know, street corridor there. You're just not going to cross Cervantes Street.
And that's what
I was
thinking.
Unless you were in a car
right
before they did
the wall, the fence or whatever.
And I have seen that work so well too, because of people there, they get in that center lane, they mash the little button and the yellow flash goes off and people will stop and they will slow down and they will cross over. So in Cervantes, I would never, even walking during campaigns and things like that, I would never walk across Cervantes Street ever. You have to, first of all, you have to run. And so I'm not a good runner. I'm slow. And so so you would have to go back, get into your car, and drive over. There was just never an idea that I was going to walk across Cervantes Street. And that's probably one of the issues there at Summit, is that people are just, that connectivity to the resources and from their homes. I mean, they just fear that their children are going to get hurt and that they are too may get killed or others. So it's the idea, oh, no, we are not going to cross Summit. And that's ingrained there.
And I think that's an interesting response to the claim that it hasn't had, you know, no fatalities, right? And to my mind, not that many accidents, but still 60 is not nothing, right? But does that mean the road is safe, or does that mean that people have adjusted their behavior to the unsafety of the road, right? You know, and would that be very different if the road were somehow made different, slowed down road diet, you know, something like that. So that's a really interesting perspective. I hadn't been thinking about it that way. Also, Jewel, I think you're the first person I have ever heard, and I appreciate that, saying that your experience of Cervantes is that the project worked.
Yes.
That the project with the fence that we have made fun of a lot, and, you know, the crosswalks, and will people actually do what they're supposed to do, or will they just be hopping the fence and all this kind of stuff? But and I don't drive Cervantes a lot, but you're saying from your perspective it's effective.
You know, there are always those few people who are just not going to do the right thing. Okay.
Yeah,
we just have to. But I have seen it work. I have seen people go there, they cross over, they hit the button, they stand right there, the traffic, you know, responds to it very well. So it has worked.
Okay.
Can there be some tweaking to it? Maybe so. But I think that it has worked, and it creates this safer, this buffer for people to go back and forth and back and forth.
Well, I appreciate that, because that is definitely not my perspective
and
on it. But
I
if
drive
you,
Cervantes all the time.
But if you drive it a lot and you say you've seen it, I will take your firsthand account over my, you know, not as informed. Jerry, you were going to add to that?
Yeah, I would say that I am so thankful that since the implementation of this project that we've not had a fatal accident on Cervantes. I would, you know, push back against the assertion that it's a good project, though. I think that if the only metric of success you're looking at is zero fatalities, maybe it's a success. But I'm not sure how we've gotten into a situation where our urban transportation planning is divorced from economics, is divorced from usability for road users other than vehicles. I mean, urban areas are all about density of people and being able to walk and bike. And while it was framed as a safety project to make things better for walkers and cyclists, actually it's made it much more difficult for walkers and cyclists, and it's hurt the business community in that area. And so,
and aesthetics. I mean, let's be obvious that that's not a zero concern. That's a value
that's
too, right? That feeling, whether it's, you know, perceived or what, you know, that feeling of, well, we live in a gated in community, and or just the visual unappeal of it. These are things that matter too.
I'll just you know, drop a little bomb here. I would say that if you had proposed that for Summit Boulevard, we'll just say it would not have would not have happened.
Or even East Cervantes.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
that's I think that's accurate.
And you know, I think that we think of this as the city design. This was not a city design. So I do want to make sure everybody understand that this design came from the state. And I learned so much, because when you're trying to build relationships and corporations with other governmental entities, it's a tricky situation. It is very tricky. You have to know when you're getting ready to lose control.
Yeah.
And so I was not familiar with that. And so, again, you okay, we're going to do the safety. We're going to put these things here. And then you find yourself losing the control you need to make it as effective as you wanted it to be. And this is where we found ourselves. I found myself as a city council member saying, okay, these things need to be done. These things need to be done. And they said, okay, good. They listened to me really well.
And, and then they did what they wanted to do.
And just continued to do. So it was a very, very much learning experience for me in dealing with these all, whether you dealt with the county, you dealt with the state, you dealt with the FDOT, and you're dealing with all of these different entities, and where did it fall? You kind of lost that control that you wanted to make things happen.
You know, it just occurs to me, because Milton is going through this right now. They're having a widening of Highway 90 downtown. There's a lot of fighting over what should it look like, how should it be shaped, will FDOT allow us to do what we want, working with the TPO, all of this stuff. It suddenly occurs to me that having suffered through the Cervantes project yourself, I mean, I know a lot of the Milton folks, but they should either reach out to you or have you would be a really interesting resource to go talk to them at their city council just about what you learned.
Yes, because it was
that they can maybe implement as they're still going through it. Yeah, yeah.
You know, would I take it back? No, because once you see the number of deaths and the number of serious accidents on there, it has done what it is supposed to do. And they tried to put some more aesthetic. I don't know when the wall came in, because the diagram, it wasn't a wall. It was like a fence, a rail fence, not a wall. So, again, learning from that experience and learning from that has been very vital for me in going forward with any other things that deal with this corporation between multiple entities. Because you're going to need to know where the final decisions are going to be made.
Right, let's take a quick break. We're talking to Jewel Canada-Wynn and Jared Jacquet here on The Wrap. Candy's got traffic on the fives.
It looks like Fairfield is showing a blockage now, and this is eastbound or northbound, sort of, coming up from 29 from Palafox there, kind of near Strikers Entertainment Center, all the way up to 110. It looks like it's a standstill right now. Not showing an accident or a slowdown right now, but certainly if you see an accident or have a traffic tip, you can text it in at 437-1620. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Thanks so much, Candy. All right, we're almost out of time. It always happens. It goes so quickly. But I definitely wanted to talk about the street sweepers because, this is one of those things where it doesn't really, I want to say this just right, it doesn't really matter, but it's fun.
It's fun.
It's a way to engage the citizens in naming and putting a little bit of art on They mostly aren't going to see the street sweepers because they go at night, so it's not like it's going to be out and about all day long. But I just think it's a neat opportunity to make government and life in the city just kind of fun for a minute. And, you know, I like the ones that they picked and all of that. But, Jewel, you were telling me
that I like the ones that they picked, but I've submitted Sweet Pea.
Oh, I love that. Sweet Pea.
That was the one that I know.
That would have been fun. There were so many good ones on the list. I remember going through that whole list and looking at them. And, Jared, it's kind of a refreshing thing to just see something just about purely fun and whimsy in government that's entertaining and nice, right?
I think it's wonderful. I mean, Mayor Reeves said that over 6,000 votes were cast in that. I mean, that's better than a lot of municipal elections.
More people voted for the street sweeper names than voted.
Maybe we should include street sweeper polls
on the ballot.
On the ballot to drive turnout.
But I did want to ask him, is there funding for that project, for the Bluffs project? How has that gone? Have we gotten funding for this area?
We are totally out of time, but do you have a yes, no for that?
Please follow us at www.bluffline.org for more information.
Outstanding. Well, Jarrah and Jewel, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.